following presentation, critical design considerations for high-density Wi-Fi was given by Jonathan Foster, the University of Exeter, at Network Shop 42 in April 2014.
Because I think we need to move on. So I'd like to invite Jonathan Foster up to the stage. In this session today, we've had a very much user-focused talk looking at the reception of mobile broadband. We've now looked under the hood of an up-and-coming technology and really got down to a low level of detail. And now Jonathan, who is operations team leader at the University of Exeter, with a big focus on wireless LAN delivery there now. And if he's still there in a year's time, you can judge the quality of his work by what he delivers for the next network shop. He's going to talk to us about some deployment issues. So, Jonathan, over to you. Let me queue up your slides. There we go.
Right, hi there. Right, I'm going to be talking about high-density wireless LAN design. I've got a lot to go through. It seems to be the theme for the day. But I've hopefully booked this room for half an hour after the session time finishes. So if anybody's got any more questions, wants to go through a couple of detailed examples I've got, various scenarios, we can do that. Okay, so what are we talking about? That's increasingly familiar site. Lots of students all working away there on mobile devices. And not a wire in sight, and possibly only one book there. So they are all relying on the wireless in increasing numbers. And if you want to go even higher density, looking at an auditorium there on the left, this is the main auditorium at the university, one that I've got to get right, 400 seats, there's an Ethernet connection in each seat, but nobody's actually going to use that because nobody actually brings wires anymore, relying on the wireless. So if we want 400 people all to be doing stuff on wireless, we've got to make sure it works well. On the right, we've got a hall of residence here. Marketing will be pleased that I used an Exeter slide with a nice sunny background. It's always sunny in Exeter. Fewer users, flats of 8, possibly 10 people, but students in halls of residence get up to all sorts of things. They'll be downloading absolutely tons of stuff. If they're using the wire, start using the wire. And in peak periods, exam periods, etc., there'll be users who really, really want to get that to work. So you've really got to provide for absolutely everybody. There's no, you can't contain your network. All right, well, what's the big deal? Why can't I just install more access points? Picture on the right here shows a nice, it looks yellow, but it's really supposed to be green diagram. With on the right, a signal strength bar showing we've got 50 to 60 dBm possibly over the entire building. So isn't that not wonderful? And if there is a problem, if there's crash issue, can I not just dump another access point in? Well, I'm hopefully going to convince you that no, that's not a good idea. It's a waste of money for one thing. The second thing is it'll actually probably make your performance worse and not better if you're adding more APs. First reason being management overheads. So your devices, like this one, my network card, sending out a probe when it wants to have a look, see what stuff's out there. So it'll potentially probe on every single channel, sending a packet out, says, who's around? And these guys answer. Now, this is three access points sending for each SSID a response. Three SSIDs, there's a total of 9 packets plus 2 retransmissions. That's 11 packets in response to that one probe request. And you can see here, the data rate to 6 megabits is pretty low, so that's slow stuff. And all in all, that's going to use a lot of your airtime purely for probes and probe responses. So think, do you want to add another access point to on this channel, channel 11, to add yet more probe responses? And beaconing. Every 100 milliseconds, your APs are sending out a beacon for each SSID saying, I'm here and these are the services I offer. So in just a very short period of time, all those packets there are just beacons. No data transfer, nothing really useful. The delta time there shows that very short space between the packets. There's just a fraction of a second of capture there. All that's beaconing. So again, do you want to just bung in another access point to try and fix your capacity problems when really all you'll be doing is adding extra overheads? And also, co-channel interference. We all know now that Wi-Fi is shared bandwidth, it's half duplex. Only one person on possibly the entire channel can talk, whether that's an AP or a client. One of the reasons for this is that the headers, frame headers, are sent at a very low rate, at the basic rate, 1 or 2 megabit potentially by default, which means that they are understood a long way away. And if they are understood, the all the devices hearing will shut up and wait, because you can only have one person talking at one time. Now, this is how they cooperate to make sure you don't get collisions, but it means adding another access point on the channel isn't going to give you any extra bandwidth. All it's going to be doing is waiting. So, in a nutshell, rising expectations for fee-paying students. As we said, we're reaching a point now where expectations demand for wires are really outstripping the ability to sort of deliver this within a sensible budget. You've all got a limited budget. You can't have a 1 AP per user or you know any sort of really high densities like that. And even if you did, you can see that potentially it just won't work anyway. So what do you do? Well, the aim of this presentation is really just to give a very quick scratch the surface look at one of the key areas here. It's not a magic bullet, but it's an aim to kind of plan capacity for your network. You can't over-provision. You've got to look at planning, getting the right number of access points. Ideally, fewer access points is better, okay? Not more. We're going to look at capturing customer requirements to make sure that we know what our customers are supposed to be, we know what they're asking for, what we're supposed to be delivering. We're going to use that information to forecast number of APs, number of radios required, and then have a quick look at some methods we can use to make better use of our airspace. Because we can't add extra channels and extra bandwidth, we've got to make better use of what we've got. And I probably won't have time to talk about real-world applications until after questions for anybody who wants to stay a little bit later. The CRC, Customer Requirements Capture. Okay, you need to find out who your users are. Different people have different expectations. Ideally, wires needs to work for everybody, but senior management and executives really, really will be cross if it doesn't work. So find out who your users are. Find out how many of them there are. Well, it sounds like a no-brainer, but obviously a wireless network with 50 people in one room is different from a wireless network with 50 people spread all over the place, different from a wireless network with only 5 or 10 people. And it depends what they're doing. If you do have a network with only 5 or 10 people, it could be that these are researchers who want to download massive, massive files. Whole genomes and things like that. If they want to do that, then you're going to need to know this. You're going to need to know that actually you can't just put 1 AP for all of them. You might need 3 or 4. You've really got to know this stuff. You've got to know where they'll be doing it. I'll say, are they distributed amongst the building or are they concentrated? An area like this with lots of people in one area may need access points. May need to use all your channels, therefore not leaving much for the rest of the building. And finally, possibly most importantly, what are they doing it with? You've heard that smartphones are only single stream devices. If all of you are using smartphones, then it is going to limit the capacity because the other streams on your access points are going to be wasted. However, if you know that all the useful work people do isn't actually on the smartphones, it's actually all on laptops. Maybe you've got a classroom that has got 50 laptops in the cover and they wheel them all out and use them. You know you can make use of that extra bandwidth. So, do go and talk to stakeholders. Meet them on site. Don't do it over the phone. If you can possibly get out to site, do so. Bring maps, bring good quality floor plans with them, and get your crayons out and mark them up, because you need to make sure that you take away, as a designer, a great piece of information that you can take away and build a network design. Don't rely on any floor plans alone, because it could turn out that you design this stuff, but then when you get to have it installed, you find that the access point, the dot on the map, is actually 40 feet up and isn't going to provide anything to anybody. And even if it does, you're not going to be able to maintain it. And avoid asking technical questions. It's not all about deep technical stuff. It's about finding out from the users, what they feel they want. A couple of examples from customer requirement capture. On the left, I've got some stuff from my own network. This has actually come out of our Airwave monitoring system. It basically shows that we've got mostly Android iPhones and Android devices, and in total about 60-70% of the devices are single stream, with just a few, sort of 25% laptops, which are like to have 2 or 3 spatial streams and able of delivering more data. And of these, only 33% are actually on 5 gig. Most of them are still on 2.4 gig. Now that's important because obviously if I expect all my people to, all my bandwidth to be provided by 5 gig, I'm going to be sorely disappointed. And on the right-hand side is a sort of semi-made-up example of a floor plan that I've marked up to show different usage areas. Now the green stuff is where I think actually there's no special requirement. This is just office space. Small numbers of users. Ideally, I would have filled in a number for each building, for each room, so you'd know that one AP may cover 50 people. I know how many rooms that is. Also, I know the areas where I don't care about Wi-Fi coverage. I don't need to make sure that they're covered, and that's particularly important when you're looking to finalise your designs. Yellow areas, I care about these a bit more because either they're high capacity or they're important. So you've got a couple of rooms that look like they might have meeting tables and what have you. Maybe if I talk to the customers, it turns out that, yeah, these are where they have these really important video conferences and they really want to do it over Wi-Fi. So it's really got to work. So I've marked those down. And then the final ones, the ones that we really care about, rooms like this. If everybody here wanted to use wireless for some activity, when you guys are all sitting down, you've got really sort of 60, 70 people in here, you've got to pay special attention. Okay, so you get all that information from your customers. I recommend compressing it into an English language blurb to start with that basically says what they want to do, what you found out. You might have a different blurb for each area, so each colour on that map, for example. It may say something like, yeah, I want to do an SD movie. Everyone needs to be able to do it at once. Maybe you're looking at Hall of Residence and you don't want to contend your network. You need to know whether it needs to provide voice, because that might be a completely different network design, or things like location tracking, quite specialist again. If you can, get that signed off once you've created that, give it to the project manager, if there's a project manager for the project, and get them to agree, or the stakeholder to agree, yeah, that's what we want to, you know, that's what we want to deliver. You may need to refer to it later. Then you can make that into a little bit more formal specification, and this is where you can start to get a little bit technical. You can say what I call a bandwidth contract, and I've pitched maybe using the data there, maybe 3 megabits per user. Or I reckon that if they want to do an SD movie and a bit of background stuff, that each person needs roughly 3 megabits. And potentially zero contention. So I can't have 50 people on my access point all getting three megabits potentially, if that means they need to share. And I've said, yeah, no, don't need voice necessarily, don't need real-time location sensing. And notice I've not mentioned signal strength, SNR or DBM at this point. If you were doing this as part of a tender process, potentially to outsource your Wi-Fi, you don't really care how it's delivered, and you may have no control over that. What you do care about is what they are going to be delivering. And this is where you can say, well, I want my students or I want everybody to have SD video, blah, 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 and I want them to have 3 meg. Let them worry about how it's delivered and the DBM, et cetera, et cetera. Just get the first bit right, and the rest of it, in theory, will follow. And if it doesn't, there'll be a contract to back it up. Okay, so we know how much juice each user needs. So we're saying 3 meg here. We can work out how many clients now each AP should be able to handle. And we need to start with the access point. You like to be locked into one vendor. If you've got Cisco on the walls, for example, you're going to need to put more Cisco on the walls. If you're looking at high density, you'll probably want to put the wizziest access point. Whether that's AC or N is up to you guys. I would suggest cost benefit analysis. If the price point's similar, you might as well go for AC for the extra benefits. If it's a lot more expensive for AC, you might want to think about it. But really, it comes down to spatial streams. And I would suggest you want by default, go for the model with the most spatial streams. And I use Aruba, so I use the AP135, which has 3 spatial streams. And the headline throughput marketing department use is 450 meg. Okay? Right, to work out how much actual throughput we're going to get, we actually need to use this MCS table. I think it's important to have a horrible table in the presentation. And to start with, we're looking at 450 meg. That's what the vendors say it will do. Well, I'm going to be arguing that it's up here somewhere, the amount of throughput in megabits you'll actually get. There's a different table for AC. It's actually a little bit simpler, which is good. And I'm going to be suggesting that a 2.4 radio can do about 20 meg, and you'll get about 40 meg out of a 5 gig radio. So real world calculation. So, all right, we said we've got about 65%, 66% single stream devices. So we'll start with that as our basic figure. Most devices single stream, you're not going to get your full throughput. You're not going to get 450 meg. You're going to get 150 meg. I'll upward adjust the final figure of this to account for there will be some 2 or 3 stream devices, laptops, etc. But yeah, basically you can cut your 450 meg in half and just skip straight to the MCS table where it says 150. But we're using a 20 megahertz channel because we say most of our clients are actually BG clients 2.4, BGN 2.4 clients. And so that we don't really want to use a 40 megahertz channel width because it's, well, it's crazy. But that drops our throughput down to 72, halved again. All the figures generally quoted use a short guarded interval, which means the symbols of data are closer together. But unless your RF environment is really good, that means that they can collide, corrupting data and causing retransmissions. So I suggest that you probably want to use a long guarded interval by default, which reduces our throughput a little bit more. And the figures, of course, use the highest QAM, 64 QAM, you're talking in N numbers here, which needs a good signal-to-noise ratio. Standing under next to the AP, you'll get that, that's fine, but if you're a lot further away through a few walls, or if the networks are really busy, the SNR will drop, and your clients will rate shift automatically down the MCS table from MCS 7 down to potentially 4, I've suggested here, as a kind of finger in the air. You need to tweak this for your own networks, but I would suggest you've lost a significant amount of bandwidth on average, because not everybody's going to be connecting at the highest rate. And of course, we're still talking about raw throughput here. I haven't even talked about TCP. If you remember in the old G days, we said, well, 54 meg, how much would you actually get? Well, you get about 20, probably, 20 megabits throughput. So broadly speaking, you can divide N throughput by 2, so our 39 suddenly become 20. And we talked about overheads. It's easy to suggest that actually you've got 3 SSIDs being broadcast and 2 APs visible. That is, at any one place on any channel, you'll see SSIDs from 2 APs. That will eat into your bandwidth by 20%. Now, there's a brilliant table, which I'll have referenced in the slides later on, which allows you to calculate this, and it's really eye-opening to see how much of an overhead beaconing is. I do recommend having a look into that. And of course, your packets are never going to be nicely queued up in perfect order, desperate to get off at exactly the right time, like synchronized swimmers. They'll be all over the place. And so you will lose further bandwidth just through inefficiency, in the same way as old Ethernet hubs. You'd never get 100%, you'd never get a 10 meg hub doing 10 megs. So I've knocked that down a little bit, just for easy numbers, say 15 megabits of throughput for one radio. Bump it up a little bit because, we will have some laptops, 2 or 3 stream devices, which are a bit more capable of doing more throughput. And as there's about maybe a third of them, I've bumped it up to 20 and 40, again, just being, ballparking it a little bit to make the numbers easy. And with that, we can work out how many users. So we've got our WSI AP135, and you can see that basically only 20 users potentially for that AP. Most of which are on a 40 megahertz channel using 5 gig. But you might be able to contend it. This is where you really need to know your customer client capture. What can you actually get away with here? If you're in a halls of residence or you design for halls of residence, I would suggest that everybody needs to be able to use it at once. So you need to think very carefully if you contend your network, because at the time when it gets very busy, your students will complain bitterly when it doesn't work. However, in this environment, the seats are all filled, but I'd like to think nobody's really actually watching video. I'd like to think you're watching this. Therefore, you could contend the network quite highly, possibly 5-6 to 1, meaning that you could get more users per access point. And also, we need to note that actually, I've said, well, most of the clients here, the capacity is on 5 gig, but most of our clients aren't, only 35% at the moment. But in a couple of years' time, I would suggest that because AC is 5 gig only, this number will approach 100, and that's brilliant news. We can stop designing for 2.4, we can start designing for 5 gig, having lots and lots of channels available means we don't have so much interference, fewer APs on the same channel, and that will really be a game changer, giving us a lot more capacity. Okay, so some helpful wireless LAN features. You can't increase the number of channels available, that's dictated to us, but what we can do is try and make better use of the ones we've got. And I'd suggest a key thing to do, and probably do by default, is to increase your basic rate to at least 6 meg. So that is kill off 1 megabit, 2 megabit, all those beacons, and 5.5, all those beacons and all that management traffic then goes a lot faster, gets out of the air a lot quicker, and takes a smaller percentage. You might even want to consider killing off B entirely. So that is to say, kill off 11 megabits as well and turn off protection for B. If you know that you've got basically no B clients in your network, turn off protection, because otherwise the whole network suffers when just one or two B clients appear. The network starts doing what's called CTS, RTS, where basically a clear to send packet has to go out to say, let everybody shut up because there's a B client going to talk. Oh, sorry, G client going to talk. And it's not going to be long before actually you can probably kill off support for G. I think at the moment, speaking for my own network, I think we've only got about 4 or 5% G clients. So it isn't going to be long before possibly we can kill off all the support for G if it's supported in our hardware. You can also tweak management traffic. You could tweak the beacons, right, the beacons. You could make it one every 150 milliseconds. But I would suggest you need to be a little bit careful if you think about doing this, because a lot of kits expect beacons every 100 milliseconds. And so if it's a piece of kit that needs to scan different channels, it may only wait, say, 110 milliseconds on the channel. So if your beacon's every 150 milliseconds, there's a good possibility that it'll just completely miss it. It'll skip off the channel, not having seen a beacon that arrived too late. But what you could do is you could stop your APs responding to probe requests below a certain threshold. So imagine a scenario where an AP gets a probe request from a device at minus 85 dBm. That's a pretty weak signal. The default is it'll respond to it, and it'll send out its slow response saying, hi, this is me, who I am. Why not get it, ignore it? Why not say, actually, you know, you're miles away, and you've got a really poor signal. I don't want you to join me anyway. You're joining at a really slow rate, so I'm just going to shut up and pretend I'm not here. And in theory, the client will be forced to join an AP that's closer with a better signal. Moving on from that, you can also use things like band steering to make sure that if you've got 5 gig capable clients, that they don't just lazily default to 2.4. You basically ignore their 2.4 attempts to join channels and only respond to 5 gigs, which gives you better use of your airspace. Aruba has a feature called Client Match, which aims to get rid of what's called sticky clients. This is where I'm here, not next to an AP, I've got a really strong signal. I gradually walk away. Gradually, I'm going to get a downshift to get lower and lower data rates. And if I don't stop, then I'm really slowing down the whole channel. The Client Match system, in theory, sends a deauth packet to that client, forcing it to disconnect. It will then say in its new position, right, okay, who's available, and then hopefully join an AP closer, gain at a much higher data rate. But beware of unintended consequences. We've only recently turned on this Client Match feature, and I am slightly sceptical about some of the things I'm seeing. This is potentially clients connected to one AP, and then to another AP, and then to one AP, and another AP, and that's not good for anybody. So one does need to monitor this. And also, rate limit. So you may not need to do on your wireless kits, you might be able to do it on your outbound internet pipe. Stuff like cloud storage happens without people realising. They're at home, they suck a million photos onto their laptop, then they come to an environment like this and they turn their laptop on, and the first thing it does is connect to the wireless and then start downloading them. And if it's gigabytes of stuff, you could potentially flatline the wireless network for everybody without user actually even be aware it's happening. So why not rate limit that? If you've got a bandwidth contract, maybe rate limit it to maybe the bandwidth contract to say, okay, we're only going to allow people to get three megabits for stuff like cloud storage. Okay, this is potentially contentious, but I would suggest that if you're putting a lot of effort into your wireless LAN design, you want to be careful about using the automatic power and channel selection, which every vendor basically suggests, because all it's going to do is potentially change the channels that you so carefully selected, potentially reducing and increasing power, which is going to potentially give you dead spots, it's going to give you co-channel interference. And you might say, well, I don't want to do 2,000 APs manually, but when do you ever do 2,000 APs in one go? You're likely to put a lot of effort into marking the positions on maps or mark a channel on them. I mean, if you're using some kind of planning tool like Ekahau, it'll do the channel mapping for you. We'll make sure you stick to those. You might also say, well, actually, but what if a rogue device appears? Do I want to, I want my APs to be able to work around that by changing channel. Do you really want to prioritise the service of that rogue device over your APs and, in theory, cause a whole network reconvergence? Because if that one AP changes channel, it might force all the other ones to change channels. And you might say, I want my network to be self-healing. I want it to be able to increase or decrease power. Do you really? Because it'll increase, if you've got an omnidirectional antenna, which is the default, it'll increase power in all directions, which means you might be creating interference. And again, if you're saying, well, I want to reduce power to protect other APs or any other services that appear, you might be creating dead spots, which I would suggest is not a good idea. Okay, now we're not going to have time to talk about any of these, but I have got some slides on all three examples. So if you are interested in a bit more detail in sort of high density design needs, then if you want to hang around. Okay, that's me.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it's really frustrating because I know all of our three speakers had loads more of information to share with you, and I'm sure many of you had insightful questions to ask, but we are limited by time. Please do use your feedback forms to good effect if you feel that mobile connectivity is a topic that should be given more time in the programme at future network shops. Jonathan has said very kindly that he's going to stay around here for a while if anyone does have a question, so I won't open up the floor to questions at this point. I'll just remind you that there's a drinks reception currently in the exhibition area now. Thank you for your kind attention during this session, and please join me in thanking all three speakers once again.
Especially your voice, because if you told me why you got designed, I would cry. It's so easy to make a break with Wi-Fi, all it takes is a busy, and there's no getting around that. Well, actually, there's a few ways you could, for example, say only 2.4 network to only service voice, for example. But that's going to be a problem for all these people. Don't even work in a real environment unless the institution says that's what you need. But we can have a little bit more detail about Echo How if you like. I've got it with me. But I'll just see what other people want to.
Yeah, sure. You were saying you've got some case studies around We still don't feel that we're on top of our game.
Well, I personally don't think Airwave is suitable for really high density design because it's it gets a kind of a view from the access point, but that's only sort of half the picture. And you've got to have a lot of information about, for example, the walls. If you put the walls into it, or what is the attenuation between those walls?
He has been doing that because he's been going out and then taking an AP and
measuring that
and trying to get a feel for it.
Well, I'd be interested to know how well that works. What we're good to do would be to compare Airwave's view with a tool like a house site survey or air magnet. Just take one lecture theatre, one area you've done, and compare the results and see how similar they are. Because I'm a bit sceptical myself. But if it's the tool you've got, and if you're doing that survey, that's the key, is to make sure the attenuations.
We're doing them off plan. We're not relying on where we're extending the coverage. We're just using we're dropping the plan into Airwave, and you're saying there are no other APs in that area to start with.
Yeah.
But obviously, if you have bleed over from the buildings. From what you're saying, I mean, it's a trouble, isn't it? Everything's interconnected.
It is, absolutely. And you often find that, on the edges, you've got many APs from the buildings, and that's sort of, well, it's not unavoidable. Yeah, I suppose it's easy, actually. If the buildings are close by, I mean, you can reduce the power of your APs, and I certainly wouldn't have anything over 10 to 15 dBm, but you could have, if you really had plumbing problems with buildings close by, could you reduce that further? And so you're saying, okay, this cell is really only covering this. And the key point is that outside that cell, you get sort of less than 85 dBm outside. So at that point, it's just background noise, and clients won't necessarily defer transmitting. Therefore, you're not getting pretty channel interference.
That's what I've been saying to them. Let's try turning down the power on some of them to improve density.
Yeah.
To then try to recover, particularly in our library, we've got a mix of 3,000 and 5,000 wi-fi's. But we're still not quite there. I think it may be. We did have some assistance from one of the resellers, and I think there's areas where we've got APs above APs, which obviously they generate problems. And I said, well, we've got to unravel this a bit more.
Well, that's why I hate automatic channel stuff, in the fact I can't really turn it off easily, because you get situations where it doesn't send, on one floor it might look great, but the floor above you've got an AP on 11 and the one on 11, and that's. And it's found the least bad scenario, but it's still not on
the
still
not, you're not making less use of the best thing.
That's it. So what I want to try and do is, we've got the Janet Wireless Admin group, I want to try and get that sort of populated with some of the answers to these questions, because we're all suffering from the same problems. We've all got exactly the same, similar user bases, similar environments, and I reckon we'll probably get some sort of best practice guides that kind of look at it from relatively high level, sort of vendor agnostic, to say, okay, how can we kind of get over these? What are the general guidelines for deploying these environments?
Kind of curious, we're going to get the nightmare scenario of getting a place like this, and everybody wants you to go full blast, and literally decides to blast out some media. And it's one of those things of. It's not a technical question, it's a usage case.
The only thing you can do is to try and tap into, I don't know if you guys have a kind of department that looks at that, and we've got some guys called Education Enhancement, and their remit is to look at teaching. Now, I'm trying to engage with them to kind of get a heads up really on that happening. Because if somebody does decide to do it, that's where I can say, just be careful. Don't spend a new one on it. You test it for free. If you can get a free test, it looks great. But otherwise, there's nothing to do about it.
It comes such a long way since 6 years ago, we did our first campaigns. manufacturer is saying, I want to be able to turn it off. But the whole deployment, for the first 3 years, we had a contention ratio of APs to users. Well, yes, it's the other way around, but it was like sort of shot through the optimum point.
And it didn't settle
its problem. I think what John said about getting time in trouble maybe is helping us to find out what that is.
We've got some purpose.
We need to let the tell to the basic set.
Which would be smart by 20
years. It's going to be a
bit off.
It's a stick. But we have a stick. It's a stick. It's a Wi-Fi. It's a stick. It's a stick.
So we've got that IP room.
It's a stick.
That's right.
It's a stick.
It does talk back to what you're saying about, you know, getting user engagement.
And that's not always possible. I mean, I've had terrible troubles with getting the stuff I suggested, which I have nice for the floor plan, it's a good deal. But how to get it? I mean, if your project doesn't have but if it doesn't have somebody a key stakeholder, you often can't actually run it in cases and judgments.
See 250 interfering access points, and you've just got to let the system deal with the interference.
But do those change on a regular basis?
Yeah, they do.
so they're kind of transitory. Okay.
Yeah,
no, that's a fair point. In scenarios where you've got, you've got lots and lots of PTC levels. Even then, I'm still sort of sceptical. So I think that if you've got, unless it's a single small building, if you've got a number of APs, they're all going to be interfering with all the ones out there. So it's almost like, if you stick the channels down and have them set, I mean, if you've got maybe four APs, let's say, and they're one set to one, and they're optimally positioned, then if you have the channels changed, then it's obviously going to get all sorts of other problems.
That's part of tried both approaches, and generally, it's just easier to just deal with it.
If
you actually done a comparison of what RRM gives you over what the ones that you've actually got set, you actually run RRM just to see what it.
No, one of the things I've got to do is I've got to want to find a decent sized building to do that. But I have, because Uber have challenged me to say, look, you know, we want you to use all the automated power stuff. I've done in our forum building, which is it's a nice posh new build, but it was designed terribly for Wi-Fi wise. We've got some massively bad interference problems. We've got like there's a street which has got it's all clear, it's for people to walk around. They've got APs on the ground level and level above and on the ends. And we've got the metric that we would use for that is, I don't know, they say an instrument metric of 100 is bad, or is pretty bad, 200 is terrible, and we've got 400. Now I was challenged to say, well, let this automatic power and stuff on, let the arm stuff take care of it. So I turned it on for a number of APs, and it actually made it slightly worse, not statistically worse, only very slightly, but it didn't fix the problem. I think if you're spending a decent amount of time on surveying a building yourself, you can do a better job than the computer can still at designing the channels. I mean, I've got, what have we got on the slides? Where are we? But I'm going to sort of ad-libbing a bit. I mean, you can film it if you like, but I don't know how good it will be, and I might wander around a bit.
Okay.
Let's have a look, see. Either that or I've got Echo Hell with me, which you can...
And the slides going to be available online?
Yes, they should be. I'm not quite sure how much use they'll be on their own. Okay, so... We want to look at automated channel and power selection. This is quite a good example. So this is a school. Somebody contacted me actually on the Airheads forum and said, oh, I've got some problems with the design. I said, look, just send me your floor plans and we'll see what we can do. Now this is a manual channel plan, and you can see that we've got, just to look at 2.4, we've got 1611, 1611, blah, 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 about 11 APs, more or less, was it 13? And I've nailed those in myself. And looking at the sort of Echo Hell visualizations, we see this mouse? Yeah. On the left, first, you can see the signal to noise ratio, and I've set the scale to be a minimum of 20, so the red stuff isn't bad, it's actually less than half 20. That's pretty good across the whole thing. If I increase the load, you can see here there's one area where it goes a bit poor, but generally otherwise it's okay. And if we look at the channel overlap for this, this is where in any of these green areas, there is only one AP visible with a signal strength of minus 80 dBm. That is to say, there isn't going to be very much co-channel interference. There's one area there we've got a little bit. Now, I would suggest if you had an automated system, this is very unlikely it'll end up in that configuration. And especially this is why I say if somebody brings in a rogue access point or another system or something that competes and your whole network reconverges, it's much more likely that you'll end up in a situation where you do get two APs, maybe not next to each other. So it might be that maybe this one's on one and this one ends up on one, but that's enough to make it a big bunch of co-channel interference that wasn't there. And it's not going to destroy everything.
And the power levels can't sell in this scenario.
I've set a default of, I don't know, I think it's 25 milliwatts in this particular example. An echo house is pretty good for, you just whack them all in. Once you put one AP in at a power level, the next one will default to that. And I like to keep those, set, because if I was to do a walk-around survey, just one particular technique, and I was to put APs on tripods in rooms, I would be measuring with a particular set power level, and once I've got a good network configuration with that power level, I don't want my system magically deciding, well, actually, I'm going to change it down to 9 today, or I'm going to increase it to 15, because you're going to create dead spots that weren't there when you surveyed. If you wanted to increase the AP density in this example, I would suggest, potentially decreasing the power, decrease the power level. But otherwise, 25 milliwatts is what I tend to use. And the visualization here just shows it's Eckhouse guess, it's saying the strongest signal strength is for each AP. And the guy who was doing this wanted an AP to cover about 3 rooms. And this just kind of indicates that, it does more or less. It's not quite perfect, but it should give us sort of set the right number of users. That's my sort of counter-argument for saying, if you're going to put time into designing it to minimise co-channel interference to get maximum efficiency, then it's unlikely that your automated system will do better. In this example, it would be great to deploy it and actually see what it did. If I do actually get around to doing a test in one of my buildings and literally just, a trade-off, say, well, arm versus me, and see which one ends up with a better solution.
So I understand that the automatic power level set is it reduces the power until they can't see each other.
You give it a minimum and a maximum, and to start with, it uses some algorithm to decide which channel is which power, and if it has too high interference, it will try reducing the power, and I think it tries to do that first before it will try and change channel. Does anyone want to talk about any other bits in particular? I've got some stuff to talk about on either. Continue on this example, which is looking at sort of what happens if we increase capacity, or the hall of residence, or I've got the form auditorium, my thoughts on designing that. Any thoughts for either the auditorium or residence? Hands?
Both.
Okay, yeah, fine. All right, why not? I've got to disappear and get drunk a bit later on, but don't have to just yet. Okay, so this is the forum auditorium. This is where the main plenary session is going to be for the network shop next year. So I've got to get this right, otherwise you can all point and laugh. It's got 400 seats. Each one's got an Ethernet connection, but we're assuming that nobody's actually going to use it. And as far as deciding what this is going to do, I think I need this in the wireless network to basically do anything, because I don't know what presentations and stuff's going to happen. In theory, the network shop's possibly going to be one of the highest usage scenarios. We're just looking at how many people had mobile devices in the session today, and next year it's probably going to be more. So I'm going to make sure that basically anything goes. I've got to be careful in this scenario about the aesthetics, because obviously I can't deploy access points that people are going to say, well, that's a bit ugly. So I'm going to be careful about the look and feel of it. And cable routing issues. I happen to know that this was designed by crazy architects who had absolutely no regard for cabling, as most architects probably don't. And so you can't actually cable up at high levels. And an environment like this would be very hard to model with an off-plan design. So if I used EchoHow like I did previously, it just showed you modeling the channels. That's not going to work in the real world, because when I fill this with bums on seats, the bums are going to be absorbing a lot of the Wi-Fi. Keeps you warm, but not very good for getting signal through. So, in this example, definitely want to do some testing to with actual people to work out what it actually looks like in reality. All right, so what we're actually going to do, I think I can probably contend the network at least 3-1, and possibly after looking at how many people were in there today using it and it was actually working really well, I reckon I could probably increase that possibly to 5-1. But if you just go with these numbers here, and if I want to assume again I want to allow 3 megabits per person, we can see that with a 3-1 contention ratio we need about 390 meg of available bandwidth. And I reckon I could probably provide that, I'd look at providing 100 megabits on 2.4 radios. Now, even though all of my clients are on 2.4, or most of them at the moment, I just don't think there's any point in putting any more radios in that, because all you're going to do is reuse the same channels, you're just going to create more co-channel interference. So I'm kind of compromising there, saying I think I can get away with 5 radios on 2.4, but on 5 gig, as many as you like, basically. We've got loads of channels. I'm using 40 megahertz channels, so I've got to be a little bit careful about channel use, but I think we've got 19 channels in the UK that we can use. 40 megahertz channels, use 2 at a time, so that's 2 × 9 = 18, which gives us, using the numbers I came up with previously in a bandwidth contract of 3 megs, would be about 360 meg. Pardon me. And the answer to this is actually to put APs under seats. Wouldn't know this without actually going and having a look. And this is why I say it's important to actually get on site and investigate, don't just rely on the floor plans. But it turns out that under the seats, there's loads of space. We can get cabling in there, I can have cabling engineers sort that out very, very quickly. So I'm actually going to look at trying to put the access points under the seats, where, as I say, they're going to be the signal may get absorbed, but users will certainly be close to the APs.
Nice and warm.
Yeah, absolutely, keep them warm in the winter, definitely. Okay, and this is roughly what the design I think is going to look like. I'm actually going to pay to get some consultants to do it properly, partly to transfer risk, and partly because I don't have the time. But I thought, well, I'll do it for this presentation. This is my guesstimate design. I'm not going to show it to the consultants, but we'll compare what I've done with what they've done, and we can talk about it. So these two access points on the right exist already, and so we need to make sure we model those. What they're going to be doing. There's all sorts of other APs around the area, and so it could be there's an awful lot of co-channel interference even before I started. Not very much I can do about that apart from possibly reducing the power of the APs in the surrounding area if I decide that those APs are less important than the ones in here.
Going back to when you were designing it previously on requirements, have you actually considered removing any APs where they're seeing very low utilisation and potentially an issue for other APs?
Yes, in the very first building that we did, in fact the one I showed you that was all green, had far too many APs in it. It was one of the first designs we did, and it was just done on a signal strength, minus 67 dBm everywhere. And you can put 1,000 APs and get minus 67 or above everywhere. And we haven't actually removed any APs, but it is underused, and I could get rid of half of them probably, and it would improve things, or certainly wouldn't make things any worse. If the network's idle, having too many APs doesn't cause that many problems. If there's no clients using it, it'll just tick along. It's only when it gets busy that then the overheads, etc., really eat into the bandwidth. But looking at this, again, we've got this AP, other than the ones in the corner, basically, 5 APs have got a 2.4 gig radio on. The rest of them are only 5 gig. So the idea being that there's a channel 1 here and a channel 1 here, and a large separation between the two. Ideally minimising the channel reuse, make maximum use of bandwidth, and avoid co-channel interference.
If you had the option to put APs up in the ceiling, that are actually high tethers, would that be...
No. You could, but I would hate to maintain it. If one of those broke, it would cost you an arm and a leg, so I'd really avoid doing it, definitely. And I'm a bit sceptical about the directional antennas these days because things like client match can make it quite easy to move to a better AP. There's another good reason as well, which I can't remember. I can't remember why I'm sceptical about directional antennas, but hopefully it'll come back to me. Yeah, I saw on the mailing list there was a particular brand of directional antenna.
Yes, right, yeah.
The only problem is, I remember what it is now, clients, so your phone has an omnidirectional antenna.
Yes.
So although your AP has directional, when you're responding to it, you'll beam out everywhere. So it does make things better, because what it will do is allow you, it'll give you more gains. You'll get a, you'll connect at a higher rate. So it makes better use of a bad situation, as it were. But if you had too many directional antennas, you'd still get co-channel interference from the clients, effectively. So it is helpful, but I wouldn't spend an awful lot of money on it, I think is probably the angle I take. When I looked at redesigning, we had an area with four lecture theatres, very similar to this, in a line, and I had a reasonably poor installation. It just was basic coverage. I wanted to put directional antennas in, but it was so difficult, because they're ugly, it was so difficult to get them installed. In the end, it just nothing happened, and I said, well, we just put the omnidirectionals back in. And I'm hoping that's something that gets improved over time. But at the moment, a lot of the directional stuff is pretty ugly. Well, I guess it's less of a problem if it's in the corner of the ceiling.
Yeah, but I mean, the use case we've got is a new building. It can be refurbished. They're going to put a big platform across the ceiling in which you can hide all these guns.
Okay.
So it'll be in this floating plume, or I don't know what they call it, where you can just chuck all the stuff away.
That sounds like it might work. The only thing I would suggest to be careful of is make sure that the AP isn't too close to anything metal, because otherwise you get, I can't remember the physics of it, but I think the metal absorbs it and retransmits it back, so it just creates effectively co-channel interference for the AP, which isn't good. What else do you want to say about this one? Yeah, okay, so we've got 9 radios on 5 on 2.4, and I think I've modelled it. Right, talk about those two. So hard to model, to plan offline, i.e. without actually physically going and putting tripods down. But that's basically what Eckhouse showed me to start with, and I thought that's wonderful. That's SNR 20 or above. So any red areas which there aren't of would be 20. That's showing we've got 50% SNR. And this is one thing Eckhouse does. It, in theory, models a simulated load. So I can say, well, I want to load the network at 20% to see what effect it has on SNR. There was some debate as to how accurate the calculations are, but if you are to believe them, then it does help us see what things are like when it gets busy. I then got Eckhouse to show me 60% load, and it's still absolutely amazing. And I thought, that's brilliant. But then I forgot that the older versions of Eckhouse especially are really bad for showing you the best case scenario. If you've got 5 gig and 2.4, you're seeing on top of each other, they're not the same. One of them is really good, one of them is potentially poor. And that's actually, I questioned that. I thought that's nuts. And I thought Eckhouse was basically being, playing silly buggers. But it turns out that actually that's the 5 gig view. And as soon as I just showed the 2.4, as I increased the load, the quality got worse. Now that's still not terrible, because that's 20 or above, so the orange areas are probably around 28, something like that, maybe, maybe this is 30 something. So you're getting a good signal here, but it did warn me to think, well, I'm still not going to get the highest data rates, especially when when this is full of clients. Channel overlap view just shows me that actually with this design we're not going to get massive amounts of co-channel interference. I suspect in reality this is green says. Effectively none, just one. There's just one AP on channel. I expect it won't be this good, because I think we'll probably get some from outside. But otherwise, we've only got two. We've only got two APs on each channel here, and 2.4, which is acceptable. In the real world, I mean, I've got some scenarios, like I say, this Fulham Street, where I've got up to 10 APs visible on a picture channel, which means that it's all right when it's quiet. But if it gets really busy, which it probably will at Network Shop, it'll break. So the question with this is, have we got enough capacity? I think for most scenarios, yes, probably. But I'm still not convinced this is quite good enough. It will all depend on how quick, what kind of data rates the clients actually connect at. One thing that struck me in the auditorium earlier was actually there aren't any walls in the way. So most of the clients should have a direct line of sight to the APs. The APs look like they're positioned very well. So hopefully the data rates will be higher than the numbers I used in my presentation example. So I think each AP isn't good. You're not going to be dropping down to 16 QAM. You might be connecting at 60 using 64 gram, which will mean that you will get more throughput per AP. But again, yeah, I will try and test it to destruction and see what happens. Okay, right. Halls of Residence, completely different kettle of fish. It's a 3D building to start with. The auditorium is just one lump, whereas here we've got multiple floors, fewer students in each area, but multiple devices per student, plus guests. Are we allowing for multiple people to come into the room and maybe three or four of them all try and use the Wi-Fi? And most importantly here, and this is more important than anything else in Halls of Residence, anything goes. I know in the days of wired connections, in fact, when I was a student, CDs had just appeared and people had just basically started downloading, basically filling up CDs with wares, movies and stuff, just because they could. Now, I suspect they'll probably want to do the same on the Wi-Fi, which means there are going to be some users that are absolutely hammering your network. So I would suggest be very careful if you think you have to contend it. If you've come up with a bandwidth contract and you think, well, yeah, I've got 10 students per access point realistically, but suddenly you're thinking, well, actually, no, it's going to be 20. We haven't got the funds to install one per 10 and it's one per 20, be very careful. It might just not work. You might instead just want to report that as a major risk back to the institution, ideally sort of backed up by some numbers. Okay, so I would suggest a 5 meg bandwidth contract if you can get it, get away with it. So that's 5 meg per student or per student room. Signal propagation is the critical factor. Halls of Residence actually often work in your favour. If you've got the money, they work in your favour. It's better to have one access point covering a small number of rooms and the signal nice and neatly attenuated as opposed to going for miles because of the co-channel interference, especially when you're talking about in three dimensions. You will need to get some real numbers. This is an off-plan, made-up survey. It's not real numbers. This is me putting the walls in, and Ekahau simulates this to say that's minus 3 dB for that wall and minus 12 concrete. I would suggest that what you can do, because these are cookie-cutter type things, they're all exactly the same, all the rooms are identical, you can probably go in a couple of rooms and take some readings, either a standard AP or a portable AP, and some kind of tool on the other side. I would suggest, if you've got it, use something like Wireless Packets OmniPeak, which is a wireless packet sniffer. What you can do is, say, capture only beacons from this access point, put a filter in, and then you'll just get a whole display of all the beacons as they're going every 100 milliseconds, and you'll get the signal strength. So that gives you a very accurate way of measuring the attenuation through walls. You can then feed that into Ekahau, or you could do a full survey, put tripods everywhere, and actually really test in detail the both the signal attenuation and also K-channel interference. Okay, but this is showing that one AP actually covers pretty well. The scale is... this is just talking about signal strength in dBm, minus 70 to minus 20. And minus 70 dBm, thinking that's a reasonable signal and that will work reasonably well. So anything that's coloured in is in spec, which means that these rooms here are all covered. And this one's a little bit dodgy, a little bit out the corner. But one AP nearly covers that flat. Looking at the SNR with a simulated load, again, we can see that actually that's pretty good. That's covering most of the area nicely. But that AP at 5 gig isn't so good. It still covers most some of the rooms, but this room here would definitely be borderline. And I'll be thinking, you know, if you end up with a heavy game, a heavy user here, somebody wanted to download loads of stuff, they might be a bit disappointed. So again, to be careful, make sure you consider 5 gig and 2.4 separately, and maybe thinking in the future, depending on the time scales, if you're doing this and the deployment was going to be an 18-month time, I would suggest you're going to have so many more 5 gig users that you could start to think of 5 gig as the primary. We designed for 5 gig, and so all the AP placements are to get good 5 gig coverage, and then 2.4, we don't necessarily care so much. It might be that we've got a higher AP density of 5 gig radios, and some of the 2.4s are turned off, and if we get a few areas that are kind of borderline coverage, you know, maybe we can live with those. Okay, so I filled in some extra APs, again showing signal strength, and I reckon to start with, I thought this looks really good, cover it with each flat of about 8 students, 2 APs. That's one AP per 4 students. It's actually quite a high density, but I would be very comfortable thinking that's going to give a really good service guaranteed to my kiddies. Notice here the scale. You might be on the receiving end of one of these, and you can get the scale, especially in Ekahau, to say absolutely anything you like. I've set this to be minus 70 to minus 20. So the red areas are good. you might show this to management, they might say, oh, you can't do that, look at all the red stuff, that's terrible. But actually, no, if we're looking at the scale as it is, minus 70 is actually pretty good. You can change the scale to be all green. You can go from light green to dark green. And I have actually, I've had a sticky meeting, and I thought, well, the management aren't really going to understand this. So I have changed the scale to get rid of red entirely. So it's all been green, and it shows a nice green map, which was fantastic. We're recording this, aren't we? Are we? No, just kidding. Yeah, the manager will watch it. Okay, again, look at the 5 gig radio. It's the same scale, minus 70 to minus 20. It still covers it quite nicely, so I'll be comfortable with that deployment. Again, only looking in one dimension at the moment, just one plan. Got a good high signal to noise, and I racked the load up here to 50%. And the SNR is still good. Green in this situation is very good, but it is just one floor. I would urge you to model all three floors if you have a three floor ground first second. This is the first floor. I haven't done the other two, but I would definitely recommend modelling it, or at very least. Take an AP out, and in the same way as you're doing, possibly doing some measurements between rooms, do one from one floor to the next and find out what the attenuation is between floors, because you'll be able to gauge to some extent how safe you are with a 3D plan. If the attenuation was only slight, maybe 10 dB between floors, you would definitely get a lot of co-channel interference. If it was a more robust building and maybe 30 dB loss, then you'll be pretty safe. As long as you didn't put APs literally stacked above each other, you would probably have only limited interference. Maybe you need to hit a budgetary target. I've decided one AP per four students is actually pretty good, pretty expensive. So let's redesign that with just two APs. Five gigs signal strength. So looking at the worst case scenario, that actually covers it still pretty well. So actually this design with just APs in the corridor might do. SNR is still pretty good, but we've got a flat, just extending the picture a little bit, we've got flats above and I think we've got one below. So you can see there's the AP, this is just showing signal strength from that AP. You can see it blasts straight through that window, straight through that window and all the way down this corridor. So three dimensions, if you've got that on three floors, and if you've got not much attenuation between floors, you will get masses of co-channel interference. So again, if you decided that you wanted to go, or this was presented to you and say, well, this is how we're doing it with just APs in a line, I would be very cautious about co-channel interference. Maybe that AP is on channel 11, maybe the floor below, there's a window lined up there as well, and that AP here is on channel 11 below. It might be when these guys are talking, these guys can't do anything, so definitely worth being careful there. So very careful if we're going to line up our APs in nice neat rows, and that goes for any application, not just halls of residence. If you're going to stick them down corridors, you've got to be very careful, make sure they're very well spaced out. Okay, and the last example which I started to look at before was a school. Two floors, guy wants 20 users per room. As it says, 20 users per room, about 300 in total. Normal internet browsing was his description of what they wanted. Ooh, good grief. Do somebody need to move? Or plus remote desktop stuff. A mix of things. His description was actually very similar to what we have here, so laptops but lots of smartphones and stuff. And he's already got AP105s, so we don't have an option here. And I asked him what the stairwell width was, because to do an offline plan, and the school is actually New Zealand, so I couldn't go and visit. Using the planning tool, we can say, well, if I know the stairwell is 1.8 metres, I can scale the map, which is very important to make sure that's accurate. So I've indicated we could probably get away with a 1 megabit bandwidth contract just based on his description of what people want to do. We don't have any information on whether the client's 2.4 or 5, but I reckon we can probably get one AP per 60 users or three rooms, which is where we came up with this plan which I've described. And it shows that the signal strength's pretty good, SNR's okay, apart from one area might struggle a little bit. But this is a case of a trade-off. I could move these around to try and get rid of that area there that breaks when is less good when we have higher load, but I might cause problems elsewhere. So I decided not to. So just one floor, there's a floor below, but that was very similar. So our channel overlap's brilliant, and if I decide I trust Echo, then I'd be very pleased if I have a scenario like that. It's very rare. I've got some examples of some terrible, some professional installs that have got terrible channel overlap, so that's really good. But I would want to, again, confirm some readings, get some real-life site survey stuff, even if, again, it was just to stick an AP in a room and just check that the signal loss and all these partitions are, in fact, drywall, and then there's no hidden concrete, which is going to break my design. But the chap then basically suggested that they are going really embracing BYOD, and so he was a bit concerned that 60 users per AP is actually heavily subscribed. So can we do one AP per two rooms? That's one per 40 users. And so I modelled it. By default, I reduced the power. I think I'm going to put more APs in. I know I'm going to have co-channel interference. So these models were done with, I think it was just 15 dBm, 15 milliwatts of power. I can't remember what that translates to in dBm, but there is a conversion table available on the interwebs. Okay, that's what the SNR looked like, 20% load, with this new design, with just basically a couple more APs, 1, 2, 3, 4, 8 APs on that floor, and I think there's 7 on the floor below. Still looks pretty good, but increasing the load, we've got some more areas where it's kind of borderline here. Again, I'm not 100% convinced about Eckehauer's ability to model this and how accurate it is, but it is an indication that things aren't quite as good. And if we look at the channel overlap, you can see that the areas that Eckehauer's worried about, there is some overlap. Now, red is 4 and orange is 3, yellow is 2. So in this area, we've got 4 APs on channel, which means that when any one of those is busy, it's potentially going to be using up all the bandwidth for everybody else. It's not necessarily the end of the world, but I would suggest it would limit the capacity. And the whole reason we did this, if you remember, was to say, well, this guy's concerned about capacity, we want to increase the number of APs. Now, this would suggest it's pointless that over this entire area here, the co-channel interference will get rid of any gains that you had. Clients might be slightly closer to the APs, so their data rates might be a little bit higher in that sense, but I think the trade-off would be that, yeah, it's a lot of cost for not very much gain. Look at the associated APs view, again, this is a view from Eckehauer. It shows that actually the APs are covering about the sort of area you want, with the exception of this top bit, which is one AP for sort of 3.5 rooms. So I may need to put an extra AP in here, but that will probably kill off this nice green bit. In fact, it would definitely kill off a nice green bit and we would get some co-channel interference. Okay, so we can say, yeah, 4 extra APs have massive impact on overlap, so we may not realise the capacity benefits, so you need to be very careful about increasing AP density. And so I think I've reported back that I would be careful about increasing AP numbers. Now, further, I've not really talked about antenna orientations or anything, but it turns out that this guy's not actually allowed to put APs on ceilings, and all his APs are actually wall-mounted, which by default is terrible, because they're designed to be ceiling-mounted, so if you're designing on the walls, the signal, shape of the beam is just completely different and providing signal all over the place where you don't necessarily want it. However, when I modelled that on Eckehauer, it actually worked out that I was able to get a higher density. I don't think I've got it with me, unfortunately, but I was able to get a higher density by putting the AP105s on the walls and staggering them. So one here, one here, one here, one here, one here. And the channel overlap was actually a lot less. So although I'd initially said, oh, goodness gracious, you can't put these designed to be ceiling mounted, when I remodelled it, specifically designing it that way, it actually worked. So the moral is perhaps that to be flexible there, and if it's not working one way, you can potentially work around the problem in other ways. And the last thing I'm going to show you is, I'm not sure if this will work, I'm not sure if we can connect to the interwebs. Super. Right, this is this guy called Andrew Von Nagy, who used to work for Cisco and Aerohive, and he's posted this overhead calculator for shows the overhead from beaconing, and it's brilliant. So it's so easy to see. It just shows how pretty colours can make things obvious. If you're looking at where's that gone? Is that downloaded? It may not be obvious looking at dry numbers, but with pretty colours we can see very quickly. We can see very quickly the effect of the overheads. From purely beaconing. Yeah, whatever, download it. And where's it going to have gone in downloads? what do you mean? Ah, yeah, okay, brilliant, thanks. Okay, right, so enable editing, that's what I don't want to forget. This is the default view. Key point here, we've got the beacon rate, so all the management traffic is going 1 megabit. So, talk about how many SSIDs we're broadcasting. So, Alexa, we have 3, so I'm going to use this column. One AP on channel, it's using 10% of our available bandwidth purely for beaconing. And in the example, as I say, where we had looking at 4, we look at 40% nearly of your bandwidth gone. And yeah, the numbers get absolutely crazy. I mean, you know, 10 APs visible, 100%. It's just a no-brainer. It's just nuts. Whether it actually works quite like that, because the APs will spend some time waiting to try and transmit their beacons. So you would get some data throughput. But let us change the beacons to go at a nice, more friendly 6 meg. And we can see that these things are actually much better. So with my SSI, 3 SSIDs, I've got 4 APs on channel, I'm still under 10%. And it only starts to get horrible sort of much further down the table. I would probably, yeah, I reckon I could probably live with something like 15% loss. I wouldn't want to design a network that's got 9 APs on channel at all, but I know that in, say, in the Forum Street area, that's at least 9 visible on channel 1, I think, which is hideous. But with my because I've increased the data rate that the beacons go at, I'm having much less of an impact. And all probe responses and all sorts of stuff then goes at a faster rate. So it is really, more than anything else, I definitely recommend investigating that.
So for example, if you've got a set up SSID, you don't necessarily need that available on every AP, perhaps. You could just even split it down to...
No, that's a brilliant idea. Yeah, absolutely. If you can do that, because... absolutely. You only need it doesn't need a massive amount of bandwidth. People only set up and then they move off effectively. Yeah, that's a really good idea. In fact, I'll write that down somewhere. Definitely. I mean, you can again, you can hide SSIDs, although that's generally not seen as a good idea. But it would reduce the impact. Anyway, yeah.
Sorry, not the end of the presentation.
It is. Yeah.
Cool. So actually hiding the so you're still. You're still broadcasting and advertising that SSID, but you're hiding it, and that actually makes a difference.
Well, the AP is hosting it, but it isn't being broadcast, it's not sending beacons, right. I think that's the case.
This recording was brought to you by Janet Training as part of NetWorkshop Online. Further information is available on our website at www.ja.net/training.